Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 24, Text 5. This chapter is Matsya, the Lord's Fish Incarnation. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, O King, for the sake of protecting the cows, brahmanas, demigods, devotees, the Vedic literature, religious principles, and principles to fulfill the purpose of life, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts the forms of incarnations. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead generally appears in various types of incarnations to give protection to the cows and brahmanas. The Lord is described as Gobrahmana Hitayatra. In other words, he is always eager to benefit the cows and brahmanas. When Lord Krishna appeared, he purposely became a cowherd boy and showed personally how to give protection to the cows and calves. Similarly, he showed respect to Sudama Vipra, a real brahmana. From the Lord's personal activities, human society should learn how to give protection specifically to the brahmanas and cows. Then the protection of religious principles, fulfillment of the aim of life, and protection of Vedic knowledge can be achieved. Without protection of cows, Brahminical culture cannot be maintained. And without Brahminical culture, the aim of life cannot be fulfilled. The Lord, therefore, is described as Go Brahmana Hitaya, because his incarnation is only for the protection of the cows and brahmanas. Unfortunately, because in Kali Yuga, there is no protection of the cows and Brahminical culture, everything is in a precarious position. If human society wants to be exalted, the leaders of society must follow the instructions of Bhagavad Gita and give protection to the cows, the brahmanas, and Brahminical culture. Om Gyanatimanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militang Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We're continuing our discussion of the Lord's Matsya avatar. And as we discussed in our previous class, a devotee always knows that Krishna is coming to favor some devotee. And we discussed on the appearance day of Sri Advaita Acharya that Lord Chaitanya and his associates have come to favor you. And it is up to each devotee to take that favor deep into the core of your life. And then your life will be successful. People want their life to be meaningful and successful. There's no greater success in life than to strive for pure love of God, pure love of Krishna. Sometimes people say, well, if according to the fundamentalist Christians, anyone who doesn't believe in Jesus is going to hell. And according to the fundamentalist Muslims, anyone who doesn't believe in what the Prophet Muhammad says as the only way, they're going to hell. So, how is it that any intelligent person can really take seriously the path of religion? When each group is thinking the others who don't believe our way are going to hell. The fundamentalists of this group are sure all the others are going to hell. They're going to burn. The fundamentalists of that group are sure that the other group, as well as everyone else, they're going to burn. So then, many persons think, what's the use of all this ruckus? have concluded that religion is a great blight upon humanity, causing so much division, delusion, rancor, hatred, violence. What is the position of Bhagavad Dharma, Sanatana Dharma, or Krishna consciousness, the contemporary term, on the varieties of faiths? That you'll find in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 17, where Lord Krishna explains, according to your contact with material nature, you develop certain conceptions. Trivida Bhavati Shuddha Dehi Dehinam Yogina. According to the influence of the particular mode of nature you're under, you have certain beliefs and conceptions. Therefore, there are varieties of religious beliefs because there are varieties of modes of nature and their effects. From the Vaishnava point of view, we don't reject other religions. We simply see all the phenomena of this world, all the phenomena of this world in relation to the modes of material nature, except activity in relation to pure love of God. When there is no material reason for your devotion to the Supreme Lord, then you are free from the modes of material nature. As you 100% engage all your senses, resources, and energy in the service of the Lord. This is the conclusion given in the first canto of Bhagavatam. Savai pum sam paro dharmo yato bhakti atokshade ahai tuki apratiyata yinatma supersedati. That religious system is first class. It's the best when it engenders, produces pure love of God without any material motivation and without any interruption. Interruptions in the service of our senses to the Supreme Lord are caused by material motivations. And when there is no material motivation, then the service, the divine service, becomes continuous. Through the eyes of Srimad Bhagavatam, we see gradations of religious beliefs, even within the Vedic context. We're impartial. Even within the Vedic context, we see divisions according to the modes of material nature and their effects. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, you hear Krishna talking about those who claim to Vedic knowledge simply for the sake of performing rituals to go to the heavenly planets. So, the Krishna conscious point of view is very impartial. Anything that does not lead to pure love of God is considered tainted by the material energy or wholly within the purview of the material energy. As practitioners of bhakti, we don't criticize other religions because that simply causes an agitation to the mind. It is good that people try to follow some kind of religious system so that at least they acknowledge that there is some kind of supreme authority, although most of them know very little about that supreme authority. At least they have the vague notion. So the problem in the world is not caused by belief in a supreme authority. The problem is caused by lack of knowledge of that supreme authority. The secularists, atheists, want to throw out any kind of belief in the supreme authority, because they say, look, you know, you have all these people, these different religions, each claiming the other one's going to burn and causing so much havoc in the world. Why don't we make the world trouble-free, problem-free, by getting rid of all delusions about the existence of a supreme authority? Because it's obvious. You can see where those conclusions are leading people. We say the problem is not about belief in God. The problem is about lack of knowledge of God. And our contribution to society is to indeed give the most comprehensive, voluminous, precise knowledge of what is God. Therefore, we would like that there's an open forum where people can discuss, if there is God, what is God? We need knowledge. And although we don't say it is the job of the government to favor one religion over another, we say that the government should provide a forum where people can bring forth knowledge of God, so we can see where is the most knowledge of God. Where do we get that? There are so many forums for deciding what is the best product, or what is the best this, or what's the best that. So where is the forum to decide what is the best knowledge of God? Where do we get that at? This is our contribution. Not to say any other religion will burn in hell. First of all, we have to understand what is religion. Most people don't even know what real religion is. Real religion means, at first, in the first case, to follow the laws of God. That means you have to know what is God and what are the laws. The more you know what is God, the more about the laws you'll know. Just like the more you understand the political processes in the beehive, where the laws of New Zealand are made in the governmental legislative chambers. The more you understand that, the more you understand the laws themselves. You understand the mentality of those who made the laws. Similarly, the more you understand God, the more you'll understand the laws of God. But because people have very little understanding of God, therefore, they don't really understand the laws of God, and often they reject them. First, you must accept that religion means to follow the laws of God. But that's just the beginning. Then, in its fullness, religion means love of God. And the pinnacle of love of God is pure love of God. Without any material motivation, without any desire for self-profit. Because people are not familiar with the availability of comprehensive knowledge of God, they just assume religion is just some kind of belief without any foundation. They have no idea that such a vast storehouse of knowledge of God is available, that you can't master it all in one lifetime. We are not fanatical. We are just trying to present the greatest storehouse, the greatest treasure chest of knowledge of God. And the means to evaluate religion. The means to evaluate religion is first of all, begins with, you have to understand, what is religion? Is it some arbitrary belief system? Is it some ethnically derived assumption? Some family or social enculturation? That's all people think. Real religion is about the pure activity between the soul and the Supreme Soul. The pure loving exchanges without any material tinge of self-profit, self-motivation. The devotee wants to simply love Krishna without anything in return. And Krishna wants to put himself under the control of his pure devotee. This intimacy, the information about this intimacy, is the exclusive gift of bhakti, the pinnacle of religion. Therefore, once you can explain what is religion, then people can compare, but they actually have no idea what is religion. They're fighting over nothing, really. Oh, you believe like this, but I believe like that. You'll burn in hell. No, no, you'll burn in hell. Better human beings spend their energy trying to understand what is God and what is pure love of God. Then easily there'll be peace. Then easily all the sectarian squabbling, at least amongst intelligent, sincere people, will stop. Once you understand the goal of all religious scriptures is to love God, then everything becomes clear. Just like when Lord Chaitanya met some Muslim soldiers as he was touring in India. He showed them from their own Quran that love of God is the ultimate goal of life. But please don't think that you are adopting some kind of sectarian path out of convenience or out of distress, out of loneliness, out of lack of higher scientific knowledge. No. By Lord Chaitanya's mercy, you have taken to the most comprehensive knowledge of what is God, and you are in contact with the process, how to love God without material motivation. Then there can be ecstasy. That is the point of the Bhagavata. In Atma, supersedity. When the love of God has no material motivation, you have no desire for material profit, then you can taste what is ecstasy in the pure loving exchange between the soul and the Supreme Soul. So you see how such a discussion immediately takes you beyond all sectarianism, all religious fanaticism. Now, why is it then that we don't just follow all religions, follow all religious teachers? The fact is, by watering the tree at the root, by performing devotional service to Krishna, all purposes are accomplished. When you focus on pure love of God, that gives you the most direct access to spiritual development. But we respect other religions, but we are particularly concerned with pure devotional service. We are the pure devotional service group. That is our goal. That's where we want to go. That's why we focus on Sanatana Dharma, Bhakti Yoga, or Krishna consciousness. And Lord Chaitanya, Krishna himself has made the approach to pure devotional service so easy in this most degraded age. Then you may say, well, okay, even within the world of Vaishnavism, Krishna consciousness, there can be different groups, different paths. But we're focused on the instructions given by Srila Prabhupada. Because practically anyone can see such an empowered devotee of Krishna made Krishna consciousness so thoroughly available to the whole world. And by his specific instructions, the whole world has the opportunity to advance toward Krishna because of the brilliance, the spiritual ingenuity of those instructions, how to apply Krishna consciousness. So these are our reasons. It's not a question of, you know, well, because I'm in this group, automatically it's better than the other groups. It is a question of dealing with the best and wanting to focus on the best. The best has shown himself. So what can we do? And the instructions that the best has given are still giving shelter to countless persons all over the world. We respect other religions. We respect other Vaishnavas. We respect other religions, certainly respect other Vaishnavas. At the same time, we want to concentrate on this greatest jewel. So that concentration doesn't mean demeaning others. It just means what it is, concentration, focus. Just like, of course, it's hard to give these kind of examples now when family breakup is so common and the nuclear family is disappearing. But if, let us say, a wife is concentrating on her husband, say Radha Prasad, she's concentrating on Krishna Prasad. Does that mean she hates all other men? No, but there's a particular reason why she concentrates on the husband. But as I said, in today's context, these examples are losing their potency. But anyway, it's still possible to understand them, but they've lost their immediate impact. Most people these days are like, well, so what if she wants to concentrate on other men, you know? I mean, you know, you just got to go where your creativity leads you, you know? Do the best thing at the moment, you know? If he's a true partner, he'll understand. So, once again, that the wife is concentrating on the husband or the husband is concentrating on the wife doesn't mean they're putting others down. No, it's just they recognize a particular value and obligation in the focus on the husband or wife. They're deriving value from that. They're deriving integrity from that. They're generating some bond. But that doesn't mean they put others down. Similarly, our focus upon Krishna, and particularly our focus on Krishna as coming through disciplic succession, Lord Chaitanya, down to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, that focus is not because of some sectarian reasons. It's because we can see that focus is most productive, most efficient. And therefore there is a sense of debt, a sense of gratitude. There's nothing wrong with a focus produced out of gratitude. Anyone who studies Srila Prabhupada's books will not be able to find any such, any other literature which is so dynamic for your spiritual advancement. So therefore we cherish these books. As we have described so many times, in Srila Prabhupada's purports, you have everything there from A to Z. Preliminary information, the most advanced information, it's all there, it's all going on at once. All the keys of the piano are played from the top to the bottom. Not just concentrating on one end of the piano, the low end or the high end. The whole, all the keys, what, 88 keys? No musicians here. All the keys on the piano are played. Now, Shukadeva Goswami is explaining why the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts the forms of incarnations. For the sake of protecting. Protecting who and what? Govipra Surasadunam. For the sake of protecting the cows, the brahmanas, the suras, or the demigods, and the devotees, the sadhus. Also, Chandasam Apicheshvara. Also for the sake of protecting the Vedic literature, as well as Dharmasyartasya Chaivahi, as well as certainly for protecting religious principles, Dharma, and also the principles for fulfilling the purpose of life. All these need protection. And to protect these entities, Krishna comes in his various incarnations. We should think, why is it the cows need protection? Why is it the brahmanas need protection? Why is it the demigods, the devotees need protection? Why is it the Vedic literature needs protection? Religious principles. And also, principles for fulfilling the purpose of life. Why? They all need protection. When all these are protected, you have a human society. Otherwise, not. In the purport, we see the sequence. Without protection of cows, Brahminical culture cannot be maintained. Cows provide milk for nurturing the fine intelligence in the brain required for thinking about advanced spiritual matters. Of course, it is a symptom of Kali Yuga that it's hard to find real milk from a cow. Of course, you are getting that here. You get your deliveries. And as part of Kali Yuga, often persons have a biological problem with handling milk. This is the... this is life in Kali Yuga. First of all, how do you find real milk? And secondly, can your body handle it? It is a great... it is a tragedy. But it's part of Kali Yuga. The milk is not only necessary for nurturing fine intelligence, but also for in the process of yajna. Brahmanas are making yajnas. and they need ghee to do that. So therefore, Brahminical culture can't be maintained without cows. Food offered to the deity. Is cooked in nice quantities of ghee. Krishna eats opulently. Krishna doesn't have any health problems. He doesn't need a special diet. He can eat deep fries. Lots of curd, butter, milk products, lots of ghee. Just because we may have our bodies may have difficulty handling all that. Shouldn't make us think that, you know, Krishna has a problem with it. So devotees offer the deity the best, the most opulent food. And then the devotees are satisfied just to take a little bit to honor the Lord's remnants. Once there is protection of cows, and you also see that by society protecting cows, things become peaceful. Cows impart religious principles just by their association, because they're so humble, tolerant, and accepting that they actually, when they're not being raised for slaughter, just by maintaining cows, causes people to chill out, so to speak, just to be calm, because the cows are so calm and mellow. Therefore, just by the presence of cows that are not raised for slaughter, human beings become peaceful. Now, if you've seen cows destined to be slaughtered, you don't get that same effect, because you see how gloomy they look, how sad they look. They know where they're going. But cows that are maintained properly, they radiate a sense of peace. Therefore, for all these reasons, protection of cows is necessary for Brahminical culture. And Brahminical culture is necessary so that society has a head on its shoulders. What you see now, as you heard so often, is a civilization without any head. No one's got any brains. Everything is just about making money, and pleasing your senses. No one has any clear intelligence. The purpose of getting knowledge is to make money. If the knowledge doesn't lead to an increase in your paycheck, it's useless. That's why everyone can be bought off. Because everyone has coalesced on this one point. Knowledge means money. So if you give me the money, I'll easily change the knowledge. Because the goal is money. Give me enough money, I'll change my theories, I'll change my beliefs, I'll change whatever you want. Just give me the money. The goal is the money. But for a Brahmana, the goal is knowledge, not money. Therefore, Brahmanas can't be bought off. People don't understand how they're ruining human civilization by this money focus as the number one goal in life. Anything for money. Money changes everything. Nations want money. Cities want money. People want money. There's no higher purpose anymore. You always point out how the motto of the New Zealand Ministry of Education is knowledge leads to increased economic development. People who go to the polytechs, who go to the universities, acquire huge debts. Why? Because they think in the future we'll get more money. Then we'll be able to pay back the debts and have much money for ourselves. There's no Brahminical culture. There's no culture of genuine knowledge. Brahminical culture means genuine knowledge and also the proper lifestyle to understand that knowledge. Cleanliness, honesty, simplicity, control the mind, control the senses. Austerity, understanding theoretically and by realization what is God. That is the Brahmana lifestyle. To understand real knowledge, you have to have real behavior. That is Brahminical culture. We have the sequence. First, there's protection of cows. Then Brahminical culture is possible. When Brahminical culture is possible, the aim of life can be fulfilled. Because the Brahmanas, they guide society to a higher purpose than just economic development. Temporarily maintaining the body. The Lord, therefore, is described as Go Brahmana Hitaya, because his incarnation is only for the protection of the cows and Brahmanas. Unfortunately, because in Kali Yuga there's no protection of the cows and Brahminical culture, everything is in a precarious position. If human society wants to be exalted, the leaders of society must follow the instructions of Bhagavad Gita and give protection to the cows, the Brahmanas, and Brahminical culture. When the proper culture is there in society, then you'll see proper human beings develop. But how do you expect that to happen in the current setup? You really expect proper people to develop out of this current culture? You're becoming mad. It's more and more obvious. And when they stagger in the door to be Krishna conscious, they're just, you know, burdened by so many psychological abuses, physical abuses, done by themselves and others. If the way that society is living now is so good, why are people going so insane? Stressed to the point where they can't function. You see here in New Zealand, so many young persons, that means, you know, under the age of 30, their brains are totally dulled by intoxication. They can't think straight. This is a great tragedy. Therefore, how can you expect anything decent to come out of such a culture? Krishna consciousness is the process by which all of society can, all of culture can be re-spiritualized. In this way, people are elevated. Elevated in knowledge, elevated in purity. Then they can understand what is God, what is love of God. Right now, they don't even have the brains to understand that. If you're under 30, you're simply taught, you know, where's the next concert? Where's the next sports match? Where's the party? How do you get your OE? How do you get your overseas experience? No higher aim in life. This is a great tragedy. Shukadeva Goswami is explaining that for the sake of protecting these necessary factors for true human development, The Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts forms of incarnations. In the next verse, Uchchavacheshu Bhuteshu Charanvayur Aveshvaraha Nochchavachatram Bhajate Nirgunatad Dhyo Gunai. Like the air passing through different types of atmosphere, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although appearing sometimes as a human being and sometimes as a lower animal, is always transcendental. Because he is above the material modes of nature, he is unaffected by higher and lower forms. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the master of the material nature. Mayadhyapshena prakriti suyate satcharacharam. Therefore, being the supreme controller of the laws of nature, the Lord cannot be under their influence. An example given in this regard is that although the wind blows through many places, the air is not affected by the qualities of these places. Although the air sometimes carries the odor of a filthy place, the air has nothing to do with such a place. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, being all good and all auspicious, is never affected by the material qualities like an ordinary living entity. Purusha prakriti stohi munkte prakriti jan gunan. When the living entity is in the material nature, he is affected by its qualities. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, is not affected. Disrespectfully, one who does not know this considers the Supreme Personality of Godhead an ordinary living being. Avajananti mam muta. Pranam bhavam ajananta. Such a conclusion is reached by the unintelligent because they're unaware of the transcendental qualities of the Lord. We want you to focus on this principle that when you are in material nature, you're affected by the qualities. When Krishna apparently comes within this world, he is not affected by material nature. This is yoga. Yoga doesn't simply mean stretching your body. Yoga means power or ability to do things, technique. Krishna is Yogeshwara, the master of all yoga. Therefore, by his yogic power, he appears in this world and is not affected by material nature. That is yoga. He knows the art. He knows how to do it. And what happens when you enter into material nature, you're overwhelmed, bewildered. You can feel it. Let's say you walk down Cuba Street, Manners Mall. If there's loud music playing, there's many people out there. You feel some effect. You feel the influence. But you should understand, you're just noticing at that point a tiny bit of the total effect of material nature. All of material nature is giving you an influence. Your body and mind, your intelligence, your false ego, are composed of material nature. They're giving you an influence. You, the spirit soul. You can't fight off all this ocean of influence, except if you turn to the master of all those influences. Therefore, Krishna says, Mam eva ye prapadyante, mayam ittam charantite. You surrender to me, I'll protect you from all these influences. On your own, you can't do it. You may say, oh, I'll fight off this influence, I'll become free from that influence, but you're totally drowning in influence. What are you going to do about it? Yet Krishna can appear in material nature and not in the slightest bit be tinged by material nature. That is yoga power. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, what does Krishna say? Pashyame yoga maishvaram. Just see my mystic yoga power. I'm spread everywhere by my energy. I'm present everywhere through my energy, but I'm not affected. Pashyame Yoga Maishram. Just see my yoga power. Krishna is the supreme yogi. And then, that same Lord Krishna comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the supreme Prem Yogi, the yogi of pure love of God. All this is yoga. So you have to elevate people's understanding of what is yoga. They think yoga is just asanas. They don't understand Krishna's yoga. They don't understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's yoga. They don't understand that yoga means particular ability or technique. Unordinary ability or technique. All living entities have some special potency. And Krishna is the source of all that potency. He is so powerful that he can appear within the material world and be completely unaffected. As he says in Bhagavad Gita, all the work that I apparently do in the material creation cannot bind me. I'm detached, I'm neutral, even though it seems I'm doing so many things. This is yoga power. And then, as Lord Chaitanya, Krishna arranges that even the lowest of persons can connect to him through pure love. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya, as we said, he's the praying yogi. He's showing by his own example how you can make the connection to Krishna without any material motivation, even in this dense darkness of the age of Kali. Krishna wants you to think about these things. That's why he says, just see my mystic yoga ability. See what I'm doing. Everything rests on me, but I'm not there. This seems like double talk. What do you mean, everything rests upon you, but you're not there? If everything rests upon you, you are there. If Dwayne says, everything is resting upon me, we expect to see big burdens on his shoulders. But if he says, everything is resting on me, but I'm not there, well, it doesn't make sense to us. But Krishna says, that's his mystic power. That is Krishna's mystic power, that everything rests upon him, but he's not there, meaning he's not burdened by the material nature. It works under his direction, but he's not directly involved. His enjoying capacities are not at all impeded by everything resting upon him. Therefore, he says, I'm not there. You have to understand Krishna's yoga power. Why he's Yogeshwara, the master of all yogis. People are fascinated by some yogi showing some tiny power. Bending a spoon with the mind. Big deal. Krishna says, Pashyame Yoga Maishram. Just look at me. Everything in the cosmic manifestation rests on me, but I'm not there. I'm neutral, detached. Even in your everyday dealings, you have some experience of a little yoga power. You may be in charge of something. But that doesn't mean that although you're in charge, you're doing everything yourself. No, things are happening under your influence. So in one sense, everything is resting upon you. In another sense, you're free. By your influence, by your energies, things are happening. Just like Krishna Loka can say, when she's over in her flat, everything is resting on me, but I'm not there. So, just magnify that ability unlimitedly, and you have Krishna. Everything is resting on me in the material nature, but I'm not there. It's going on by my yoga path. by my influence. But I'm off enjoying with my devotees. Just see my mystic power. Just see my yoga abilities. And then Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya, and he shows the praying yoga, yoga of pure love of Krishna, in the most intense way, love of Krishna and separation. That love of Krishna and separation can look to the uneducated eye as suffering, but actually is the greatest ecstasy. Sometimes even devotees, when they begin their study of Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, especially they read about Lord Chaitanya's ecstatic transformations, they may become a little afraid. This looks like a lot of distress. It's a lot of crying, a lot of lamenting, a lot of bewilderment. Yes, some of you felt like that? Ooh, this is a bit too much. It takes a while to become acclimated to the most intense ecstasies of the spiritual world. That's why Lord Chaitanya said, if you see tears in my eyes and think that I have love for Krishna, you should know I'm just making a show. Because if I actually loved Krishna, I would have died long ago out of separation. What is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita is the Premagni, the fire of pure love of Krishna. It burns. You take your choice. Do you want to be burned by the blazing fire of material existence? Bhava Maha Dhavagni, the fire of repeated birth and death? Or you want to be burned by Premagni, the fire of pure love of Krishna? Maybe in your mundane days, you were hit by the romance bug, and you, at least for some short time, your head was spinning, and you're thinking, I can't live without this person. Krishna Prasad and Radha Prasad and I were discussing that last night. Because they were saying, oh, those days were long ago. When the Cupid's arrow hits you and your head spins and you just think about that person day and night, right? She was describing how she first met Krishna Prasad. They were at some party, and then Krishna Prasad left to pursue other parties with the lads, you know, do a tour of the town and check out other parties. And then, so she was thinking, because she was checking him out, she was thinking, oh, I should say, you know, I should make an overture. But then he left with his lads, you know, his mates, he left. So they went to check out other parties, you know, and other night spots in Palmerston North. And then he came back. And she didn't let the opportunity slip this time. She had a brilliant line, presentation right there. Yeah. She said he had dreadlocks. So she walked up to him and said, can I touch one of those? And immediately Christopher said, oh, got a live one here. So, certainly for a while, the head was spinning, the breathing was quick, you know, the always thinking of that other person, you know, what will please her, right? What will bring us more together, and, you know, how can we push this on more and more? And then such feelings go away. Those feelings, that experience is just the tiniest indication of what pure love of God is like. The Lord Chaitanya, as the praying yogi, demonstrates this. Can't sleep at night simply thinking of Krishna. Getting up in the middle of the night, wandering outside. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Mistaking a sand dune for Govardhan Hill. Mistaking a river for the Jamuna River. Mistaking a park for Vrindavan, groves of Vrindavan. Yes, this is described as madness. The madness of pure love of God. So there are different types of yoga. And Krishna as Yogeshwara, the master of all mystic yoga, shows his yogic perfections in the way he manages the material manifestation without being implicated, seated as neutral, detached, unbound. And, by the way, he enters into loving relationships with his devotees, even becoming subordinate to his devotees while still being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is yoga. Krishna consciousness mission is for protecting the essential elements for human progress. The cows, the brahmanas, demigods, devotees, the Vedic literature, religious principles, and the principles to fulfill the purpose of life. So yes, we are going one way and everyone else is going another way. But our trek is based on knowledge, not fanaticism. Knowledge and pure motivation. Therefore, real love is possible. Where there is comprehensive knowledge and pure motivation, you can actually taste ecstatic love. That is real religion. Savai pum sam paro dharmo yato bhaktir dokshaje. Only love of God without material motivation can satisfy the self. All right, any questions? Yes?
Can you explain how we can identify material motivation? Service and how you dig it out?
You try to please yourself. Selfish motives. I want to do this to please me. I get pleasure from it. That's the material world. The spiritual world is, I want to give pleasure to Krishna. How would Krishna get pleasure from this activity? What pleases Krishna the most? The principle of sense gratification is common both to the material and spiritual world. Simply, the question is, who is the sense gratification for? You cannot deny the sense gratification principle of the spiritual world. It's just that all the sense gratification is for Krishna. We are in the material world because we want to imitate Krishna and enjoy like Krishna. This is our problem. We want to feel like we're the center of all the enjoyment. Things are coming to us. We're feeling better by things. And therefore you demand that of other persons. When you get angry at someone, like, what are you're not doing anything for me. What's your purpose anyway? You're supposed to be making me feel better. So you get angry. A devotee is always thinking what makes What gives more pleasure to Krishna? Actually, Krishna doesn't need our efforts, but we benefit by those selfless efforts. The example in the Shastra given is that when you look in a mirror to decorate your face, you're decorating your face, but automatically the reflection is decorated too. Similarly, when you exert yourself to please Krishna, automatically you're also taken care of. How many of you, of course, when you decorate your face, or let's say you're putting on tilak, maybe, I don't know if the ladies here use makeup or anything, but no. So when you're putting on tilak, how many of you are in anxiety? I'm putting tilak on my face, will it come out on the reflection in the mirror? No, you don't have that anxiety, you know. If I put tilak on the face, automatically it's going to show on the face that's in the mirror. So similarly, a devotee knows by serving Krishna, automatically you're taken care of. To acquire that kind of conviction and determination takes some purification. Therefore, neophyte devotees are a little queasy in the beginning. Well, how is it that by serving Krishna, you know, I'll be automatically taken care of? I don't know. So they're a bit edgy, you know. It's like, you gotta, yeah, serve Krishna. Krishna is all attractive. Krishna is wonderful, but you also gotta watch out for yourself. You know, take care of yourself. You can't actually take care of yourself in this world. Such an extraordinarily dangerous place. I just happened to see while I was at the dentist yesterday. Yes, the other day before. Two sisters were driving their car on State Highway 1. I think somewhere, might have been somewhere around 11 or something like that. And the highway went over a bridge, and it was raining, and they skidded onto the other side of the road, right into the path of a truck. Finished. And it was a huge traffic jam as they cleared up the mess. And their mother was caught in the traffic jam, wondering, why is there such a huge traffic jam? And then, you know, then she found out the news that she had lost both daughters in one moment. The same traffic jam she was stuck in was caused by her losing her two daughters, whose car skidded to the other side of the road right into an oncoming truck. Now, because we actually can't take care of ourselves in this world, doesn't mean that we neglect our health, neglect our fitness, run our bodies down, or balloon our bodies up. Because, you know, hey, you can't take care of yourself in this world, it's danger at every step. No, you consider your body is Krishna's property and take care of it. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you can't be a yogi if you eat too much or eat too little, sleep too much or sleep too little. When you consider this bodily machine as belonging to Krishna and you take care of it in that way, that is devotional service. Not that I gotta take care of my body because my body is gonna give me pleasure. No, you take care of the body, thinking the body will give Krishna pleasure by engaging in his service. You do the best you can with it. Knowing that ultimately, you can't take care of a material body. But if you can use this temporary material body for achieving the spiritual goal, that's the best use of such a bad bargain. It's a contradiction. You're trying to take care of something that is doomed to fail. You ever, when you get a nice piece of new clothing, a new jumper, you know, even a new bead bag, a new sari, you know, don't you get the feeling? It looks new now, but it's going to fade soon. It's going to get old. Similarly, you should think the same way about your body. It feels okay now, maybe, but it's going to fail me. But you take care of it as best you can for the sake of Krishna's pleasure. Both health and sadhana are very important because both those things allow you to go on with your devotional service. Of course, the sadhana is more important than maintaining the physical health, but still, both have to be there. Otherwise, your service is disrupted. Any other questions? Yes.
This is a pretty basic question, but is there a mind that is the airplane? Could you explain sadhana, please, very much?
Sadhana means the daily practice of devotional service, the things you have to do. Just like you have to breathe for the body to live, similarly, for your spiritual life, you have to chant Hare Krishna every day. Follow the rules and regulations for your spiritual life to blossom. Sadhana means you have to do it. It's like when the doctor says you have to take these pills every day. You may say, well, I don't like the taste of those pills. No, you have to take them if you want to be healthy. You have to take them morning, noon, and evening. You have to take the pills. So you do it because the doctor ordered. So similarly, you do sadhana because the spiritual doctor orders. Srila Prabhupada gave a very compact definition of sadhana bhakti. You remember what it is?
You do it because I want you to, or something. Whatever.
Sadhana bhakti means you do it because I say you have to do it. In other words, the doctor says you have to take this medicine. Just like when I went to the dentist 2 days ago, I had to surrender to his sadhana. Open your mouth. I have a new scraper that, you know, does the job better. You know, I just had to submit. How many of you, when you go to the dentist, you fight with the dentist? Don't stick that thing in my mouth. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Did any of you do it? No, you just go there and open your mouth. And he sticks his fingers in your mouth and puts all sorts of strange things in your teeth and between your teeth. What can you do? Then when you're finished, you know, you go to the reception desk and you're presented with the bill, right? So that's sadhana. So then, when I was at the dentist, you know, after he finished cleaning my teeth, he said to me, oh, looking at your records here, you haven't had an x-ray in 3.5 years. So I tried to give some excuse. Well, I'm late, we're running late, you know, because you know, he was a half hour late taking me. So 3.5 years is a long time. I don't think anything's wrong. I mean, you're doing a good job taking care of your teeth, but you haven't had an x-ray in 3.5 years. Of course, this is motivated devotional service, you know. It's not simply he's thinking of my welfare. He's also thinking how to make the bill higher, you know. So they always say, you know, you need an X-ray, but then they don't tell you how much it costs, although you know, yeah, he's making the bill higher. So, but he presents it in a sodden way. 3.5 years, you have that X-ray. You have to keep regulated. So then, you have to submit. You're thinking, much as I hate to pay for X-rays, maybe, you know, if I ignore it, there could be some problem that comes severe down, further down the road, and, you know, it's more expensive then. So you have to surrender. So sadhana means you take the doctor's orders and you apply them, whether you feel like it or not. When you are given a prescription of some pills, you take them, whether you feel like it or not. How many of you, when you get a pill prescription, say, well, I just don't feel like taking pills right now? No, you take them. It's just the way it is. It has nothing really to do with how you feel. You just take the pills because of the doctor's order. So that's what sadhana bhakti means. The rules and regulations of devotional service, you take as the order of spiritual master, and you do it. And then you become healthy. But there is a level of devotional service beyond sadhana, where you're not doing it because you have to, but because you're doing it because you love to. That stage will come if you just take your medicine now. That stage of spontaneous attraction, raga, in which you just love doing things for Krishna. But in the beginning, to get over the material disease, you need to embrace the spiritual duties just because you must. But then gradually, over the years, your motivation will change so you feel spontaneously attracted to doing devotional activities. For example, in my godbrother Srita Kirti's memoirs of his service to Srila Prabhupada as personal assistant, he describes how whenever it was time for Srila Prabhupada to take some short rest during the day, he would say, all right, excuse me, now I must waste time. He's spontaneously feeling that any moment spent without service to Krishna is a waste of time. Of course, for such an exalted devotee, even while he's resting, he's serving Krishna. But for the sake of teaching others, for the sake of teaching his disciples, he says, okay, excuse me, please leave. I have to waste time now. It is one of the preliminary symptoms of ecstatic love, described in Nectar Devotion, that the devotee is very anxious not to waste a single moment without Krishna's service. I think it'll be very good for you all the more you begin to think of bhakti as yoga. It is. It's bhakti yoga. And get out of this kind of religious space, you know? Because religion is not... Religion, real religion is not understood these days. So as soon as you say religion, what do you think of?
Lip service.
Yeah, lip service. What else?
Boring
belief system, right? What else?
Not cool.
Huh?
Not very cool.
What else? Michelle?
Church, something you take part in one day a week.
One day a week, some rituals, huh?
Yeah.
Any else?
Rules and regulations.
Rules and regulations. So many of us have brought these current misunderstandings of religion. So therefore, you might even feel uncomfortable about being known as religious. Bhakti is yoga. Krishna says, yogi nam api sarveshan, mad gate nantaratma. Of all the yogis, all the different types, the highest yogi is the bhakti yogi. Because he's always connected to me in pure love and devotion. Yoga means technique. So bhakti yoga means the techniques for loving Krishna without material motivation, without interruption. Okay.
Could you please could elaborate a bit on the connection between calm protection and Brahmic compassion? And what you said, calm really means everything mellow.
Elaborate? I did. I explained how milk is necessary for nurturing the finer intelligence so that you can understand very intricate and weighty spiritual topics. I explain how when cows are not raised for slaughter, they generate an atmosphere of peacefulness, and how you can derive religious principles, understand the mode of goodness just by keeping cows, maintaining cows. Just like, of course, we'll speak more about this Tuesday. We have a special subject at the end of Tuesday's class. But so many of our lady devotees, when they're talking to me about what they envision as, you know, for their married life, quite a few of them always mention, you know, looking out the window and seeing cows. You know, because, you know, what they're saying is, you know, they like the peace, the quietude, the calmness and stability and security that cows radiate just chewing grass in the pasture. That's why, you know, they like to be around cows. Cows are, you know, chewing grass in the pasture, chewing the cud, and they're nurturing. They have calves. They're nourishing their calves. The bulls are around, ready to service them. And, you know, it's just it's all there. You know. We'll speak more about that on Tuesday when we discuss dreams and realities. Yes?
Maharaj, I was wondering, when we buy, you know, butter and cream from the supermarket, aren't we supporting cow slaughter?
You can't do anything these days without there's some relation to something wrong. Therefore, you be responsible for what's in your own control, because this age of Kali is an ocean of faults. Anything you do when analyzed materially will wind up connecting to something that's unsavory. By my speaking in this microphone, who knows? The microphone could have been produced in a sweatshop somewhere where someone's being exploited. On and on and on it goes. The clothes you're wearing, you know, they might have been produced under very horrible conditions. You're eating, and it could be said because you're eating, someone else is not getting food. An ocean of faults. That's Shukadeva Goswami's statement. Dosha Nitta. You can't see the end of the ocean. And there's only one good thing in the age of Kali. Kirtanadeva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Parampara. Simply by chanting Hare Krishna, you can achieve freedom from material existence. So why you just pick out milk? By buying milk from a supermarket, you're supporting, you know, the slaughterhouse industry. Why don't you just pick up that aspect? You could say, when you walk down the street and look at the girls, you are supporting the whole exploitation culture. Just by looking out of the corner of your eye. What about that one? There's just faults everywhere. So why just pick out the milk thing? We're doing the best we can in a world of contamination. So Krishna, he accepts milk, milk products. We offer that to Krishna.
Maharaj, in connection to the previous two questions and some background alcohol, in Kali Yuga farming, we get rid of a lot of bulls because you don't need as many bulls as you had cows for obvious reasons. In Vedic culture, what do you do with all the bulls?
They work. Like saying, what? You know, in a normal civilization, what do you do with fathers? They work. While the mother is nurturing and nourishing, the father is working. So the bull is like the father because if he's worked, he's plowing ground, so they're grains. He's the breadwinner. And the mother, the cow, is providing the milk. So, because there are tractors, bulls are put out of work and slaughtered, and also human beings are put out of work, and they're slaughtered a different way. The average young man would think, what, me plow, you know, with a bull? The average young Kiwi doesn't even want to plow with a tractor. What do you think of a bull? Right? I have better things to do than walk behind a bull plowing. You know, I've got ecstasy to take, herbal drugs, you know, concerts to go to, you know. Yeah, I could be a DJ. I'd rather be a DJ with no pay than walk behind a bull all day in the sun. Right? Right? So all of society is affected by these choices of how food is produced. So you've got countless New Zealand youth just destroying themselves with no meaningful activity because they don't anymore see the need that they should be directly involved in the food production process. Not necessary. Get a tractor, take over the work of, you know, 20 people, save labor costs. Labor is so expensive, you got to pay, you know, the employer has to pay the ACC, this, that, tax, this, on and on and on it goes. Better just get a tractor and put the young men out of work. They can get the dole or... That is not real human civilization. Real human civilization has as its goal not economic success, but success in the elevation of consciousness. Therefore, decisions are made differently. Better to have the young men plowing the fields with oxen than just, you know, becoming socially useless. Doing things like, you know, going to the polytech and taking hospitality courses when you know you'll never get a job in it, but just want to get the dull people off your back. In Australia now, they've renamed the social benefit office. You know, just to give it a better aura. It's now called Central Link. So by getting the dole, you are linked to the center. The center is maintaining you. Mm-hmm. No, that is considered a viable solution rather than have young people grow food. There's always plenty of petrol to power the tractors, plenty of petrol to make chemical fertilizer. What do you need people to work for? People have better things to do than grow food. They need to be awake between 11 and 3 a.m. to go to the party drug shops. they're farming. How can they do that? Most young people think, who wants to stick their hands into the ground, get your fingernails dirty, rain falling on you? Better just get some nice intoxication, nice party drugs. Right? You can change all of society just by changing the food production processes. Materially, you can change all society. You could make society favorable for Krishna consciousness just by addressing the way food is produced. That has economic and social and political ramifications. You see, once people taste properly grown food without chemicals, naturally grown food, their life automatically becomes simple because you get so happy just by eating good food. And people really don't know what good food is anymore. No matter how much money they spend at the so-called finest cafes and restaurants, they don't taste what real food is. Grown naturally. We're speaking materially. If they just, I'm not talking about prasad at this point, if they just take nice foodstuffs grown naturally, their life becomes simple. They're satisfied. That's the secret of traditional Indian culture. As Srila Prabhupada explained, the happiness of traditional Indian family life is eating. The kitchen plays such a major role, and then everyone's happy. You eat good, you're happy. Don't have so many other desires because your tongue is satisfied, your belly is satisfied. But because people's minds are agitated because they don't eat nicely, they have to do so many other things. Movies, discos, clubs, this, that, the other, sports. But you just get a one good meal, we're speaking materially, one good meal, you're satisfied. Oh yeah, that was good. What to speak of? You take prasad. That's why we always emphasize the cooking culture. The cooking culture, in preparing foods offered to Krishna with love and devotion, creates satisfaction. So you have to understand what are the rewards, even seen from the material point of view, when people live a simple agrarian lifestyle. They eat well. Eating well doesn't mean like exotic restaurant well. Eating well means healthy, tasty food grown properly. Automatically that calms them down and they feel satisfied. That's why in the traditional Vedic system, family life, the wife is in the kitchen all the time. Now, from the contemporary point of view, that seems like, ooh, slavery. Gender roles applied to specific domestic tasks. Ooh. Right, Michelle? But when you look at it from the same point of view, what is the lady doing in the kitchen all the time? She's creating satisfaction, happiness, stability. Because traditional Vedic culture is based on the fact that the tongue is the most powerful sense. You satisfy the tongue and everything else becomes peaceful. What would you all be like without good prasad? Be raging monsters. Isn't that so? But when you get nice prasad, you're just happy. Okay. You tolerate so many inconveniences, you know. So by the traditional role of the lady in the kitchen all the time, she's not a domestic slave. She's actually running the show through the kitchen. In where I was staying in, what was the name of that island? St. Lucia in the Caribbean. I was there in, I think, November. And I was staying at the home of a very wealthy devotee. And a very big house overlooking the ocean. And his wife, she's very intelligent, very expert. She does, you know, he's a dental surgeon. No, an eye surgeon. And she has a little import-export business she does. But her main activity, she told me, is be in the kitchen. Her husband told her, I just want you in the kitchen all the time. Now, say that to a New Zealand woman, she'll say, all right? What do you mean you just want me in a kitchen all the time? What an insult. Demeaning, degrading. But she took it as an honor. Of course, she's got a first-class kitchen. Yeah. She serves prasad on silver plates, silver bowls, you know. But what is she doing in the kitchen? She's actually controlling the mood of the whole house. And the husband submits to that control. By him saying, I just want you in the kitchen all the time, that means I want to come under your control. Hard to understand, huh? Because she's controlling through the tongue. So these understandings are unknown to people today. What do you mean you want her in the kitchen all the time? You should want her in the office or out there somewhere making more money. But what's the use in making more money if there's no satisfaction? A traditional Vedic culture shows how to be satisfied with the simple things. But those simple things, that it's simple doesn't mean it's not satisfying. This is the problem. People have an understanding. And simple can't be satisfying. It's got to be complex, intricate, in order to be satisfied. So people aren't aware of these things. So by our constantly expanding the cooking culture, the Krishna conscious cooking culture, what you're actually teaching people is how to be satisfied simply. Because, I mean, many of you, when you first came here and tasted the prasad, you're like, wow, I feel so good and satisfied just by eating that food. Right? That's what you felt?
Excellent.
Yeah. And you began to think, what's the need of me making, of my making so many other endeavors when I can just come and eat the food and I'm satisfied, right? Yeah. So automatically your life starts to become focused and simple just by the tongue. So similarly, this you know, wife of a devotee in the Caribbean. I mean, she does a little business on the side. She's a smart lady, but she takes that as her main activity. You know, she controls the moods of the whole house through the tongue, through the kitchen. And that way she's actually in the top position. But from the viewpoint of contemporary society, she's in a low, menial position in the kitchen, cooking. Right? But from the same point of view, she's in control. I looked in the garage to see what she's driving. Yeah, because the husband, he's driving some flash BMW four-wheel drive. I said, well, yeah, what's your wife driving? He just pointed. Yeah, also a BMW. In other words, she gets what she wants. But from the modern point of view, this is slavery. Keeping an intelligent, talented woman like that in the kitchen. Oh, what is she doing in the kitchen? She's teaching her daughters how to cook also. She's listening to music and lectures all day. This is a completely different way of living. Anything else? Yes?
Pretty much you were explaining about following the orders, like the sadhana of the doctors, and I was wondering about the pastime of illiterate Brahmana. It seems like his spiritual master gave him instruction that was hard for the Brahmana to follow. So could you explain?
Well, from the material point of view, sometimes doctors give medicine that's hard to swallow, yeah? But you take it to get healthy. Just going to the dentist and having your teeth cleaned. Do you know that? You do that sometimes? They stick that thing in between your teeth. Does it feel nice? Why do you do it? Why do you get your teeth cleaned? Why? Yes, because you don't want any problems. Even though it feels uncomfortable. You like sitting there in the dentist chair with your mouth open and someone... You like that? You know, have to have that thing that sucks out the saliva, you know, hanging out of your mouth. There you go. It's all falling down your chin and onto you. It's disgusting. And, you know, the lady assisting the dentist, you know, she's, you know, holding the thing that sucks out all the excess saliva she's holding in your mouth. And then if the dentist is a talker, he's talking to you while you're like that, and you can't say anything back. Did that happen? Yeah. In the case of the illiterate Brahmana, actually, his spiritual master knew he couldn't read, but still he gave that order. And so the Brahmana took that order as his life and soul. And that was his perfection, that he took the order as a life and soul, not that he could read. From mundane vision, we would focus on, well, could he read or could he not read? The guru ordered him to read Bhagavad Gita every day. Could he read or could he not read? But no, what did Lord Chaitanya focus on? He's trying his best. Therefore, he's seeing Krishna. Do you understand? Lord Chaitanya said, you are the real reader of Bhagavad Gita. Lord Chaitanya asked him, I notice as you're turning the pages, your tears are coming to your eyes. What's going on? Because you just told me you can't read and everyone around you, The other Brahmanas are laughing as you turn the page because they know you're illiterate, but still you're turning the pages. I see tears coming from your eyes. What's happening? And the illiterate Brahmana explained, whenever I, on each page that I look at, I see Krishna instructing Arjuna on the chariot. When I think of how the Lord becomes the chariot driver of his devotee, the tears come from my eyes. When I think of Partha Sarathi, the Lord as a chariot driver, Arjuna, tears come to my eyes. The Lord becomes a servant of his devotee. So Lord Chaitanya embraced him and said, you are the real reader of Bhagavad Gita. And then Lord Chaitanya revealed his form as Krishna and told the illiterate Brahmana, don't tell anyone. So the illiterate Brahmana's success was not whether he could read or not. His success was he tried his utmost, 100%, to follow the order of his spiritual master. And Srila Prabhupada said that's the reason for his success. He never told us, I am successful because I am a Nitya Siddha, eternally liberated, or this or that. I am successful simply because I tried to humbly carry out the order of my spiritual master. So that's my only secret. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.